How do we work with a client's resistance when that resistance is shielding them from pain? Dr. Pat Ogden remembered one important lesson from a mentor that stuck with her for entire practice, and it's changed the way she approached the idea of resistance. Here she shares how this insight helped her lead one client through a radical breakthrough.
Well, resistance is not a term I'm fond of, to start with. When I was first learning to be a psychotherapist in the early 1970s, I met Ron Kurtz, and everybody was talking about resistance even then. And he said, you know, if you think your client is resistance, you need to look at how they're not feeling safe. And that really made an impression on me. I also often think that when we call clients resistance or difficult, it's basically because our interventions aren't working, because we feel incompetent, right? That said, there are clients that are challenging, that get into patterns of response that they can't get out of, that have internal conflicts, that live in their you know, the way they think, that lives in their emotions, that lives in their body, where they have, say, impulses to grow and expand, but also impulses to pull in and retract. So these conflicts, I think, are often named as resistance. Sometimes there's such a tendency to blame the client for not responding to our interventions that I feel cautious with that word, resistance. I have a client that I'd like to tell you about. We'll call him Stuart. He came to see me for a consultation session because he had been in therapy for about 15 years. He had switched therapists and had been at the same therapist for the last 10 years. He was very successful in his life, had been really at the top of his profession. But there came a time where he said he just decompensated, and he connected it to his mother's depression when he was about 18 months old until about 3 years old, which of course is a very critical time for a child. And he was just stuck in that time frame. He was crying constantly. This had been going on for years and years, and he had tried to work with that baby part. He'd even built himself a whole room, like a primal scream room with big size toys and furniture and all, to try to go into that baby to heal it, and it hadn't worked. In this consultation, he, for the first half of the session, like, nothing was effective. He was just, no matter what we would try to connect, he was sobbing, crying and crying, and not able to really use any intervention in a way that would help him get through all those tears and all that loss. And he was currently in a relationship that he loved this woman very much. It was a new relationship, but he was so angry with her because she couldn't be there for him. Because what he needed was somebody, he wanted, not needed, was somebody to be there for him as a mother would for a small child. So what really helped him was working with his body. I often think in terms of movement and movement vocabulary, and his collapse and curling over and the depressive posture with this shortened rectus abdominis muscle, which goes from, you know, can pull your body over like this from your pubic bone to the top, to the rib cage. It just was shortened, and that was his posture. When he was talking about his girlfriend, he said he was angry, and his fist, you know, came like this. And so I put a pillow there, and he pushed out against it. But for a long time, he said it was just neutral, nothing happened, and he was still just crying. And then there came a moment where I could feel the shift in him, where it wasn't an aggressive push of keep away. it turned into a push of identity. Do you know, like when a child pushes up against the parent to find their sense of self and their own identity. And that was the turning point. He needed to be able to push in a variety of ways to be able to feel himself. And that push also, in fact, the push started with, I asked him if he could just straighten up a little bit, which was also a push from the pelvic floor down and the top of the head up. Like, you know, when you see a little child who's learning, just beginning to sit up and how straight they are in their backs, they've got that push, which in some ways says, this is who I am, this is me. If you collapse like this, you don't have that sense. So we worked with that push in many, many ways, with hands, with, you know, pushing with the top of his head, pushing down with his pelvic floor, pushing down with his feet as he stood up, pushing against the wall. And he started to be able to notice his own boundaries. Like, that kind of pushing, it activates your muscles, so you can feel where your body begins and ends. And that started to shift his sense of self and how he lived in his body. Now, what's important there is that we're not trying to override this part of him that's in pain, or this little baby, but he was stuck in that, right? So he needed to develop a physically felt sense of self so that he could actually help that part of him grow up, you know, inside himself. And so that was an exciting session for me, and an example of working with, I think, what most people would call resistance.
Did that happen all in one session?
Well, this was a consultation session, so yes. But then, you know, he'd have to work with his therapist to practice this, mm-hmm. because these procedural patterns in the body, you know, he'd been living this way for years, and it's going to take a lot of practice for him to mm-hmm. to live in his body differently and heal that. Yeah.
If we go back to the first thing you said, you were quoting, I think, Ron Kurtz, and you said, when people are resistant, it's a signal that they don't feel safe. If you saw that, Pat, how would you respond?
Well, I think we see that constantly. And I think the therapist and client's task together becomes one of finding out what's scary, what's not safe. For example, for him, with that baby part, it was probably something like, well, if I get better on my own, I will never get the love I need, which of course isn't true. So that part would need some work and some reassurance, right? It's just like the previous client with the shame client, you know, she would go into this flat place where she couldn't hardly respond. She was just cut off from her emotions, just operating at the surface of her awareness, really. And a lot of people would say that's resistance. But I wouldn't call it resistance. She needed the safety of our relationship and my reaching to her for that part of her that was so ashamed to feel safe enough to come forward.
And when you would think about that, would you talk to her about it verbally, or would you move to make her feel more safe? How would you approach it?
I think both ways. I think sometimes talking verbally, like sometimes, like I'm thinking of one client who has she has dissociative identity disorder, and there's the part of her that feels very frightened of making any kind of assertive, aggressive action, because that would have made the trauma much worse in the past. So, you know, we have to work with that part of her and use other internal parts of that client to help that part understand that things are different and try out a little action and notice that nothing bad happened, you know. That she's okay, she's not going to get hurt again, and then try it a little bit more, and again, nothing bad happened. I'm thinking of another client now who she would try a motion and she goes, okay, nothing bad happened there. And then she would try it again. She would say, no, okay, nothing bad happened there. Because that's when a part has of the person or has when a person's had a childhood experience where a certain kind of action has brought more abuse, of course they're terrified to make it again. Even though consciously they know they're not in danger now, there's still that implicit part that's absolutely terrified.
When we're able to identify our client's safety issues, it can help us become more targeted in our interventions. For some further insight into this kind of resistance, let's hear from Dr. Kelly McGonigal.
I'll share with you an exercise that I started using in my behavior change workshops that I get so much positive feedback from. And I'm sure that many people watching or listening will be familiar with this exercise. It comes from acceptance and commitment therapy. But for those who aren't, I have to describe it because I've gotten so, people tell me they think about this all the time once it's been demonstrated. So this is where people identify first, they identify what they feel or say to themselves that keeps them from doing something that they would like to commit to. So when they think about doing it, I'll make a fool of myself. It'll be too difficult. I can't handle whatever the experience is. People come up with what the thoughts are, the emotions, and they write it out. It's like a single sentence. And then I will ask that person to come up, to stand up. And we often do this in front of a group so that people can see this happening. And you know, I might write on a piece of paper, I cannot walk. Give that piece of paper to the person and say, can you read what's written on this? And they'll say, I cannot walk. And I ask them to close their eyes and repeat it in their own mind. I cannot walk. I cannot walk. Even to sometimes embody what it feels like to be saying in your head, I cannot walk. I cannot walk. And then I say, okay, now this is so strange, but could you just walk around the room while you continue to think, I cannot walk. I cannot. You can say it out loud if you want, or it can just be in your head. And so people get to watch someone walking around saying, I cannot walk, and clearly walking. The person has that direct experience. And we talk about what it's like to have thoughts and feelings that say you can't keep going, or you can't do this, or you shouldn't do this. And isn't it amazing that you have the capacity to make a different choice depending on your values and commitments? And then people can reflect back on their own resistance and say, oh, well, it seems to me that when I choose not to do what I say I want to do, what I say to myself is, I'm going to make a fool of myself, and I don't want that. So they could practice saying that in their head and then imagine, so what would I do that would be a step in that direction even when that thought comes up? And they could imagine doing that. And then they actually do it in real life. And it's such a, like so many of the things in ACT, it's a great concrete kind of metaphor or visual experience that flips the light switch for a lot of people.
As Kelly showed, when we help clients challenge their own resistance, it can open the door to change. In part two, we'll look at what keeps clients bound to their resistance patterns. I'll see you there.